We are, of course, in our series called Reset. Everyone say it with me. Ready? One, two, three. Reset. Reset. It's been a good series so far. Challenging series, hasn't it? I think part of the reason it's been so challenging is because unfortunately, reset is a lot more than just pushing a button. You know, resetting our lives and all of that, a lot more than just pushing a button, unfortunately. Really, it's about change, isn't it? About changing how we see things, changing how we think, changing how we live. And this is especially true in regards to what we're going to talk about this weekend. In fact, to start out, I want to take you to the Old Testament book of Daniel. If you don't know where Daniel's at, it's in the Old Testament, somewhere between Lamentations and Jebediah. I'm just kidding. Don't look for Jebediah. You will never find it, okay? But anyway, let me give you a little background. Daniel, okay? First of all, about 605 BC, 600 years or so before Christ, the Babylonians had invaded Jerusalem. But instead of destroying Jerusalem, they instead decided that they were going to do everything they could to destroy their identity and destroy their culture. And eventually what would happen is they would make Israel a slave state. And as a part of their process, the Babylonians went through and sort of handpicked the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the brightest young men, and they captured these young men, shipped them off to become sort of ingrained and immersed in Babylonian culture, and so that ultimately they could become like these model Babylonian citizens. Well, one of the guys that was chosen by the Babylonians was a guy that you've heard of, a guy named Daniel. As a matter of fact, if you've ever heard of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those were three other ones, right? You remember that those guys, right, from Sunday school, right? Anyway, so Daniel, okay, so he's been captured. He's been ripped out of his culture. He's been taught a brand new language. In fact, he was even given a new name. Now, if you know the story, what you probably know is that Daniel actually did all right. I mean, Daniel he did pretty well considering what had happened. He adjusted. He went with the flow until one day when his new masters demanded that he do something that he said, "I'm sorry, there is no way that I can be a part of this." Let me show you. Daniel chapter 1. All right, I'm going to start at verse 3. Says this: "Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men, without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians." Now listen, verse 5, this is where the problem comes in for Daniel. Verse 5, "The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table." This was the problem. Well, why, Scott? Was it because Daniel was a vegetarian? Was it because he didn't care for the king's preference of wine? It was just a little too dry, you know? Now, what was the problem? Well, the problem was actually not the food and the wine itself. The problem was what the food and the wine symbolized. Because traditionally, what would happen is the Babylonians, in their worship of their pagan gods, would offer that food, their food, they would offer food and wine to the pagan gods. And after the meat and the wine was offered to the gods, they would take whatever was left, and it would end up being eaten by the king and the court as sort of this like final gesture of loyalty to these pagan gods. All right, and so by eating the food, in essence, what was happening was they were, by eating it, acknowledging their gods as their provision or the source of their strength and their provision. Or in Daniel's case, all right, if he were to eat of the food and wine, what he would be doing is essentially giving their gods credit for his wisdom and his abilities, okay? And so Daniel says, "No way, man, I'm not going to cross that line. All right, you can cut my hair, you can change my name, you can teach me new language, but, okay, I cannot and I will not defile myself with the king's food and wine. Not going to do it." risky decision. I mean, after all, I mean, really, if you think about it, I mean, in many ways, really, Daniel, I think, had every reason in the world just to go along with this. I mean, think about it for a second. I think it would have been very easy for Daniel to kind of go, look at me, all right? I have forcefully been taken from my home. My family is missing, probably dead at this juncture. I've been stripped of my identity. And so why should I remain loyal to a God who so clearly abandoned me? And then, of course, not only that, but, I mean, Daniel really wasn't in that bad of a position. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. I mean, instead of killing him, they're grooming him to become a model citizen. Better option. Right? I mean, instead of being assigned some menial, you know, horrible work task as some were, Daniel was being trained to serve in the king's palace. Instead of starving, okay, he's being offered the same food that the king is being offered, right? Are eating. So like, hey, Daniel, why rock the boat? Really, is it that big of a deal? Besides, what is God going to do? I mean, it's not like you have a whole lot anyway. I mean, what more could he do? Everything you value and everything you know has been taken away. The damage has been done. See, Daniel was faced with a choice, wasn't he? He was faced with a choice. Do I obey God or do I obey the king? All right, do I obey the invisible king in heaven or do I obey the visible king, okay? But the bottom line was he couldn't have it both ways. Someone was going to be cheated. Someone. Because on one hand, he could either give into Nebuchadnezzar, thus cheating who? Or he could give in to God and thus, you know, end up cheating Nebuchadnezzar. But there was no way that he was going to satisfy both. Someone was going to be cheated. There was no way around it. Now, I think that this is an important story for us today. Because in many ways, you and I think we find ourselves in very much a very similar dilemma that Daniel was in. I think just about every single day of our lives. Except for us, the issue isn't, you know, what we're going to eat. The issue isn't, you know, is it going to be a king or God? You know, for us, okay, the issue really is, the dilemma for us is something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and that is our time. Our time. I mean, what are we going to do with our time? Okay, listen, Daniel's loyalty was tested by what he ate. Our loyalty is tested by what? Our calendars, right? How we use what we talked about at the very beginning of this series, our time. I mean, think about it. Every single day, you and I are faced with the decision of where and who we're going to give our time to. We're confronted with it every day. And then, not only that, but because there's never enough of it, because there's never enough time to give everyone and everything the time that they want, the time they desire, the time that they deserve, that they hope for, and that they expect, because there's not enough time, you and I are forced every single day to cheat somebody. We're forced to cheat. Every single day. I mean, someone always gets cheated, right? I mean, think about it. I mean, the tendency for us is to think, well, you know, my problem is I just don't have the right calendar program. I mean, my problem is my schedule. I just got too much going on in my schedule. You know, I'm not disciplined enough or whatever it might be. Listen, those really aren't the problem. The problem is there's not enough time to get everything done. There's not enough time. There's too much to do, and there's too little time to do it. There's not enough time. I mean, think about the two most common areas of our lives that we really feel this in. What are they? Home and work, right? Does anyone else feel that tension in their lives? Huh? I mean, look, if you were to sit down in your workplace, you know, tomorrow morning, and you were to figure out how much time it would take to do everything that needed to be done, all right? Everything that needed to be done and the way it needed to be done, all right? And follow up on every opportunity, every potential sale, every potential meeting, making every single contact you need to make, return every single email, most of us would never go home. We would be at work all the time, wouldn't we? And here's the thing. At the same time, if you were to think about your home life, if you were to sit down and you were to kind of add up what it really takes to completely satisfy those little love banks in our children, right? And I mean, to the point where they say, okay, Dad, I'm full. I've got it all. I need no more. Dad, we're filled up. I think we've played enough, all right? That's it. No, look, does that happen? Come on. No way. It's like a bottomless pit, isn't it? Right? Our kids never say that. Hey, Dad, seriously, that's enough. I'm tired of playing. All right? I'm tired of having fun with you. Please, go hang out with Mom. Okay, please, go to work. Some of us may have heard our kids actually tell us to go to work, or our wives, right? But here's the thing. If you somehow figured all of that out and how much time was required to do that, you know, with our children and then to fill our wife's, you know, love tank and our husbands, you know what we discover? We probably say we only have, I don't know, 10 hours, 15 hours to work. And then that's not even including hobbies, right? Or like developmental things like golf or isn't that development? Anyway, you know, or you know, being involved in church, serving in the community, you know, you added all that together, you discover the exact same thing. There's not enough. Listen, the problem is, there's just not enough time. It's not that these things aren't important. It's not that you know, our families are just demanding too much time of us. Our children, what's wrong with my children? They're demanding too much time. You know, it's not that, well, I just got to find the perfect calendar app for my iPhone. All right, then I think I'll get it right. No, the problem is there's not enough time to give everything and everyone what they want with, well, what you're convinced and or what they've convinced you needs to be done. There's not enough time. Which means that someone or something is not going to get from you what they want, what they desire, what they hope for, what they deserve, or what they expect. Someone is always going to be cheated. We all cheat. We all have to cheat. I mean, we all have to decide, okay, as much as I know I really need to do this, I'm going to have to instead do this today. Or instead of putting these resources here, I'm going to put these resources over here. I mean, someone is going to always be cheated. All of us cheat. All of us have to cheat, period. We do it all the time. We don't always call it cheating. I mean, especially when, you know, we're trading, especially when it's like, when we're making what most people consider to be a good trade, right? Saying no to the fifth Krispy Kreme donut of the day would rarely be considered cheating. But it is cheating. If you think about it, what are you cheating? You are cheating your appetite, right? You're cheating. So look, all of us cheat. All of us have to cheat, all right? So the real question is not, do you cheat? Because you cheat every day. The question is, in your life, in your circumstances, in your schedule, whatever it might be, the question really is, who are you cheating? Who? Or what are you cheating? Or perhaps another way of saying it, a more uncomfortable way of saying it, is who in your life feels cheated? Chances are they probably don't use that language and say it that way. Well, now they will after today. But who in your life, as you listen to the conversation, specifically think about your family, all right? And if they got really honest with you, and if you got really honest with them, okay, who feels cheated? Chances are, for most of us, it's not our work. It's not our business. No. Listen, or if you're a stay-at-home mom, chances are, okay, the problem is not your children. It's not going to be that your children feel cheated. Someone else might feel cheated. And if they were to get really honest with you and have a conversation, they might say, well, you know, I kind of feel cheated. I feel like the time that I deserve, the time that that belongs to me is going somewhere else. This is a tough one. Okay, because all of us love our families, don't we? All of us. And in fact, my guess is that if I were to ask you right now how loyal you are to your family, my guess is you'd probably answer in a very extreme way. And you'd probably say something like, I'm very loyal to my family. But then if I were to ask you, okay, give me your evidence to show me how loyal you are to your family. Well, chances are your answer would probably be a lot like mine. Most of us would not necessarily point to the amount of time that we give our families. We would probably point instead to what we feel or to what we would do, right? Or what we've done, how far we go to make sure our family's provided for or how far we go to protect them and all of that. Most of us would not point to our time. But here's the thing. Your family's perspective, it's different. It's different, man. Okay, see, here's the thing. For them, for your family, it always boils down to one thing. Time. Time. You and I can say whatever we want, but it comes down to time. See, for Daniel, his choice of diet was an indication of where he placed his loyalty. For you and me, and especially when it comes to our families, the indication of our loyalty is that right there. It's time. It's time. And yet here's the problem. Okay, when it comes to your job, when it comes to your employer, when it comes to your client, guess what? They all judge your loyalty the exact same way, your time. Okay, your time. And since there's not enough time to completely fill everything and everyone, what in the world do you do? Well, what most of us do is what? Most of us turn our attention to whatever domain is screaming the loudest, right? And we end up running all over the place. It's like, wait, okay, where's the biggest mess? Okay, now let me go there and fix that. Okay, who's screaming the loudest now? And it's like we run from disaster to disaster, which really doesn't solve anything anyway. And then on top of it, it ends up teaching our families that the only way to get our attention is to create a crisis. Right? Look, it doesn't work. All right, besides, why allow a crisis to determine where we cheat? What if you and I could be more intentional about making sure, because we have to cheat. The issue is not will we cheat. The question is who are we cheating and are we cheating the right things? So what if you and I were to learn how to cheat intentionally? Now see, for most of us, we know the right thing to do. I think the challenge for us is that we're just unsure how to do it. How do we break out of the cycle? How do we change it? I mean, sometimes I feel stuck with it. So how do I make a change? Well, thankfully, there are a couple of wise things that Daniel did that I think can really help us and we can learn from and that will help us in really resetting this area of our lives called time and where and how we're cheating. So let me show you. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, I want to look at the first part of verse 8. Is it hot in here? I wish we could just switch for a little bit. Put the lights on them. I mean, you don't want to look at this anyway, right? Okay. Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. Sit down here. All right. See, this is much nicer. That's not sustainable. Okay. Where was I? Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. It says this: Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and the wine given to them by the king. Daniel was determined. Now, some versions of the Bible say that Daniel purposed in his heart. Some translations make everyone in the Bible seem like type A personalities, right? Daniel, type A. I'm not type A. I can't do that. No, so read a different version then, okay? Read the type whatever, other whatever, okay? Daniel purposed in his heart. So what did he do? Well, he made a decision. Daniel made a decision. And we talked about decisions last weekend. Was it last weekend? It was last weekend. We talked about decisions. Daniel made a decision, and it was a risky decision. I mean, think about it. It was a decision that was going to end up disappointing his, you know, the visible king, Nebuchadnezzar, and would cause him and force him to place his fate into the hands of the invisible king, God, who, well, hadn't really seemed to be helping him out a whole lot at this time, this juncture. Yet, he was still willing to make a decision to obey and to trust his creator, even before knowing what the outcome would be. He made a decision. Let's keep reading. Verse 8. Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. Listen, he asked the chief of staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. Really? I mean, seriously, come on. All right, let's see here. Hold on. Babylonians. Egocentric. Merciless. Violent. Let's see, the ones who slaughtered my family and destroyed my hometown, okay? All right, what are the odds that they're going to change the rules for Daniel's religious preferences? What happens? Verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. Let's read it together. Ready? Now God. Stop. Say it again. Ready? Now God. Keep reading. Had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. There's so much here. I mean, that phrase, now God. Look, okay, I think that there is something really significant about these two words. Now God had caused the official to show favor. I mean, I'm sure Daniel's thinking right then, whoo, relief, right? But I bet he's also thinking, okay, but God, listen, next time, or, you know, if I could have had it my way, I would have really preferred like some sort of guarantee up front. Right? If you could have somehow guaranteed me that this was all going to work out fine, it would have made it a lot easier. I wouldn't, my stomach wouldn't have been nearly as upset. But he didn't. God didn't do it. No, no. Instead, the favor came when? When? After Daniel made the decision. Came after. Daniel, listen, Daniel decided to do what was right, and then God honored him. God gave him favor, but it began with a decision. See, here's the thing. Choosing not to cheat, or choosing to cheat in the right areas of our lives, begins not by coming up with your elaborate plan. It begins by simply making a decision that you are going to do what's right. You know, this past year for me was a great reminder of this in my life. You know, a little over a year ago, I came to the realization, man, there were just some areas of my life that I was stuck in. And so as God began dealing with me on this, he began to paint a picture in my life of what I needed to do, the changes I needed to make, and showing me what I needed to do. And I got to say, man, I was afraid. There was fear. Sometimes we don't call it fear. We call it other things, right? But, man, there was fear. And you know, I remember thinking, you know, do I have what it takes? This feels overwhelming. I mean, if I do this, I'm gonna burn out. My life's going to be miserable. God kept dealing with me over and over. And I remember I was trying so hard to figure out how it was all going to work out. I mean, I would sit down, I would sketch it out, I would draw it, I would write it, and I would try to figure out how it's going to look. But then you know what I eventually realized? I realized that what God was looking for was not a plan from Scott. What God was looking for was a simple decision to say yes. That's all he was looking for, was a decision. You know, sometimes that just saying yes to God is the hardest part of it all. We think it's the plan. It's not the plan. What's the hardest part is actually submitting ourselves, surrendering, and saying yes, and making a decision. And I'll tell you, it took me a while, but I finally said yes to God. And can I tell you something, man? I'm so glad I did, because you know what God did? Surprise, surprise. God honored my yes. God honored that decision multiple times over. And man, it changed my life. And as a result, it's even changed other people's lives. See, it always begins with a decision, not a plan. Right? For you, for me, it begins with a decision, not a guarantee that God's going to make it all work out exactly how, you know, we want it to, or that it's all going to work out in our favor. Not a 30-second HD preview of what's coming, okay? No, listen, it always begins with a decision. Would you say that word with me? Decision. Say it again. Decision. Which means what? Well, it means that you and I cannot wait until we're going to wait until we know how it's all going to work out. All right, it means that we cannot wait for the perfect opportunity or the perfect job or the new whatever. The decision has to come first. The what is the decision. The how, that's the plan, always comes later. See, the plan, the how, that's always the wrong place to start dreaming from. Because you'll always feel overwhelmed by it. You'll never know how it's going to work out. You will become paralyzed. You'll become stuck. Daniel, he had no idea how. But he did know what his what was, didn't he? He didn't know about the what. He did know, okay, there's no way that I'm going to cross that line. There's no way. See, here's the thing. When you and I are willing to take a hard look at our lives, and when you and I are willing to make a decision that we're going to reprioritize our lives in a way that honors God, listen, you know what God will do? God will reach down in the midst of our chaos. He will reach down in the midst of our craziness and all of the uncertainty that we're facing, and he will always honor us. He will always honor us. I know this to be true. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've seen it over and over again in your life. See, I'm convinced that sometimes God is just waiting for us to say yes. Man, I think sometimes God's just saying, please, okay, I want to do something incredible in your life. Man, what I want to do will blow your mind, but you have to say yes. Make a decision, and then watch what I'll do. Yeah, but God, I want to watch what you'll do first, then I'll make a decision. Nope, doesn't work that way. Look, see, for Daniel, God honored his decision to do what was right, and what looked like an impossibility on the surface ended up becoming a reality. Changed his life, but it all came after the decision. How do you make those kind of decisions in your life? Well, let me just say, I think it comes down to knowing what your non-negotiables are. What are your non-negotiables? What do you know? I mean, do you know what your non-negotiables are? When it comes to cheating, when it comes to your family, when it comes to your work, what are your non-negotiables? If you don't know what your non-negotiables are, you need to figure out what they are. I'm telling you, it is so hard to make confident decisions when you don't know what your non-negotiables are. I mean, you end up wasting so much time considering options that really aren't even options, and you would know right up front if you took the time to have the non-negotiables. Right? See, non-negotiables, they become a filter in our lives that help us to be able to make better decisions. It removes wasted time. Man, there's people who will spend a year looking for a job, and they will go out and they will go to every single job interview that they can find, and oftentimes they'll realize like 80% of them were not even an option because of whatever it might be. They would have saved themselves a ton of time had they sat down and said, here's the three things that are really important to me. Man, if you've bounced around from job to job, do that. Sit down and say, okay, by now I should have learned what are my non-negotiables. Man, I've been in three environments that just haven't worked. All right, what was it about those environments? What do I need to do? There's freedom in this. What are your non-negotiables? Maybe some of you with your families, your non-negotiables might be something like, you know, okay, I am not going to miss my kids' games on Saturdays or whatever. Or I'm going to miss no more than two games if you travel a little bit or whatever. Or I'm not going to miss out with dinner with my family. Or, you know, I'm not going to allow myself more than one night a week that I'm not going to be at the table. For some of you, it might be, you know what, Sundays, I'm going to protect them. And I'm going to honor God with that day. I'm going to, give that day to my family. I'm going to really have a Sabbath. For others of you, maybe it's saying, okay, I'm going to travel less. I'm going to limit myself to X amount of trips away, or I'm only going to be gone for, you know, never more than X amount of nights in a row or whatever it might be. I mean, you really have to ask yourself, what are my non-negotiables? Listen, talk to your wife. Talk to your husband. Pull your kids in on it. Ask them. I mean, I'm not saying, like, make them the CEO of your family, but I mean, pull them in and ask them, like, what would really make a difference for you? What would you like to see? See, the time to make those decisions is now. It's not when you're in the middle of the chaos and the craziness and when the pressure is on. If you wait till then, you're almost always going to make a bad decision. Are you with me? I mean, even if I'm just preaching to myself, I'm getting something out of this right now. It's really good. I mean, I'm definitely going to download the podcast of this one. What are your non-negotiables? Now, there's one more part of Daniel's story that I want you to see, okay? Daniel doesn't stop with his decision. He then, after he makes the decision, he trusts God to help him come up with a plan of how he's going to do it. Okay, we should never stop at the decision. We should always trust that God's going to help give us a plan. All right? If you and I are going to make some shifts, we've got to make a plan. We've got to trust God to help us make a plan. All right, let me show you. Daniel chapter 1. Let's see what happened. This is really amazing. Daniel chapter 1, verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But, there's always a but the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. All right, so like what happens when he sees your scrawny butt walking around and he's like, well, what's wrong with Daniel? Well, well, the king is going to cut my head off, man. So Daniel, all right, I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm a little concerned about that. What does Daniel say back? That's your problem, not mine. No, Daniel doesn't say that. Daniel cares about his concerns, and here's what he says. Verse 12, please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water, Daniel said. Verse 13, at the end, listen to this, at the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. You know, we'd be better off approaching things that way sometimes, right? We want immediate answers, don't we, sometimes? And because we want immediate answers, oftentimes we get the answer we don't want. There's wisdom here. Verse 14, the attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. Brilliant. Brilliant. You ever done that where you've said to someone, all right, I'm going to ask you something, but I don't want you to give me an answer. Do not give me an answer. I just want you to think about it. Don't even if you already know the answer, do not give me an answer. I just want you to think about it. All right, I want you to have an opportunity to have some sleepless nights. God's going to mess you up, all right, until you say yes. No, you don't say that. But anyway, no, but there's so much brilliance here. I mean, think about it. Daniel, all right, he's made a decision to do the right thing. But he also understands how important it is to approach the issue and the situation well. All right, what did that look like for him? Well, it was him giving a flip about what this guy thought. It was him being sensitive to the predicament that he was putting this guy in, right? So what did he do? Well, he approached the situation diplomatically. In fact, he even gave the guy a way out. He said, try it, all right? If it doesn't work, then we can discuss it later, all right? But let's try it, then make a decision. So what happens? Well, the story goes on to tell us that at the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his men, listen to this, Daniel and his men ended up looking healthier and more nourished than any of the young men who was eating the king's food. Again, God honored Daniel, right? God, and then if you know the story, God goes on to fill Daniel and his men with great wisdom and great insight, ends up using them in incredible ways. And if you haven't read the story, you should read it sometime. It's a pretty amazing story. Let me get really practical for a minute. Let's just say that you have to make a decision. Let's say you decide, you know what, I'm cheating my family in a wrong way. And so I need to make some shifts in maybe in my job. Let's talk about that for a second, all right? Which means what? If you got to make some shifts in your job, if you're in a position that you can, because I realize not everybody's in a position where you can just make a, you know, change your schedule or whatever. So let's say you got to go in, you got to have a conversation with your employer or your boss, whoever you work for, and you got to talk to them about this, all right? Let me just tell you, give you a couple things that will help you, all right? We can learn this from Daniel. This is not about reacting. It is not about demanding. Let me say that again. This is not about reacting. It is not about demanding. Okay, the goal is not to lose your job. All right? Or to make a point with everyone in your office to show how fancy you are with your skills. All right? No. The goal is to find a way to negotiate your way to a better schedule, more manageable schedule, more flexible, whatever it might be. See, okay, think about what we see in Daniel. We see a guy who understood what it meant to be both dogmatic and diplomatic. That's huge, man. He was dogmatic in his convictions, but he was diplomatic in his approach. I mean, that should have just been the sermon right there, I realize. That should have been it. Sorry for everything else I just said before that. All right. He was dogmatic in his convictions. he was diplomatic in his approach. You can be both. You don't have to choose, okay? It's not one or the other. You can be both dogmatic. Daniel was not going to compromise his convictions, but he also wasn't going to demand his way either, right? He didn't stage a hunger strike. All right? He didn't get ticked off. He didn't tell him off. You know, Daniel was committed. Well, you know what he was committed to? He was committed to doing the right thing the right way. That's not always easy to do, is it? Huh? But God will honor that. It takes a ton of faith to do it that way, though. It takes a ton of faith to do the right thing the right way. It does. That's not usually the easy way. It's usually easier to do the right thing the wrong way. I mean, walking in and giving his boss an ultimatum, saying, let me tell you what's going to happen, boss. That's not faith. That's stupidity, right? Huh? But I've seen this. Let me tell you, I've seen this. I've seen it, all right? Someone catches a glimpse of the hurt that they've caused at home, and so what do? They go into reaction mode, and they go in, and we're going to fix this, and in the process of reacting, which always gets us in trouble, in the process of reacting, they make a complete out of themselves. And then some, because their attitudes were so rotten, okay, they ended up getting fired. And then they come, Pastor Scott, pray for me. I went in, I told my boss how it was gonna be, and he fired me. Sounds like a very wise boss. Huh? I probably would have too, man. Look, don't forget, you can do the right thing in the wrong way and end up in a worse mess than before. It takes wisdom, it takes trust, it takes direction. God will help you. And now let me say this too, because I know there might be some bosses in here who are going, hold on, I don't know if I like this. All right, some of your employees, they come to the next service, so you're like calling them up, right? You're texting them saying, do not come to 11 o'clock. I need you at the office. I got some errands. Something's come up, all right? Listen, all right? I'm trying to figure out why three of my staff asked for appointments on Monday. I don't know. It's weird. No, listen. But let me say that. Look, choosing to cheat in your workplace has nothing to do with cheating your employer. All right? It has nothing to do with cutting out of work early or doing things behind your boss's back. Those things are wrong, and God cannot honor those moves. All right, cheating in this context is about putting a plan together with your boss and reallocating your time and getting straight what your priorities need to be. That's what this is about. And I mean, listen, what Daniel did is just such a perfect example to us. I mean, he asked for permission to change his work conditions. All right, then what did he do? Well, then he listened to the objections of his boss, right, of a supervisor. And he didn't listen and go, well, I don't know, that's your problem. Tough luck. No, what did he do? He proposed a test that showed a concern for his supervisor's concerns. Right? I mean, what would happen if you approach things like that a little more, right? Hey, I want to propose an experiment. All right? If it doesn't work, we won't do it. But I got an idea that I think that would really help me. And in turn, I think it would help the organization. Here's something to write down. If you have a pen, write these down real quick, all right? If here's what we can learn from Daniel. Three things, all right? Number one, address the issue directly. Be honest about it. A lot of times, we're in the position we're in not because our boss has given us too much work, but because of our lousy productivity. And so, or because we've allowed ourselves to use our jobs as a way to keep us away from the conversations we need to be having at home or whatever it might be. And so, if that's the case, be honest about it. Sit down with your boss and tell him, look, I'm not blaming this on you. I put myself in this position, but I need some help here. Address the issue directly. The second thing is ask. Don't demand. The third thing is offer alternatives. You know, maybe there's another way to go about this that I'm not thinking of. All right, maybe we could try it this way for a couple weeks. If you're not happy with it, we'll go back to how it was. Whatever it might be. So address the issue directly. Ask, don't demand. And the third one is offer alternatives. Sometimes it's a matter of just asking our bosses or supervisors, hey, would you hold me accountable better? Because I'm wasting time at work. And so that's why I'm working 60 hours, right? 20 of those hours are Facebook time. Yeah, but Scott, you don't know my boss. You're right. I probably don't know your boss, all right? But I do know God, all right? And I do know that by letting that stop you, you are potentially limiting what God may want to do that would make a huge difference in your life. Trust that God will help you. Trust that he will give you favor as you do what? As you address the issue directly, as you ask, don't demand, as you offer alternatives. See, for most of us, I know where we're feeling this today. We're feeling it in our families. Someone said to me last night, man, I wish my husband was here. And someone else said to me, man, I hope my wife doesn't come tomorrow. Well, how about this? Just look within yourself. Look within. What if today you and I made a decision that we were not going to cheat in whatever areas that maybe we're currently cheating in that we shouldn't be? I mean, if it's our families, what if you made a decision that you are going to do whatever it takes to not cheat in your home for, let's just say, 1 month. 1 month. Because I know if I say, go out and for the rest of your life, forget it. It's overwhelming. But what if you just took 1 month, 30 days, all right? Those of you who are married, all right, you sit down with your spouse and you talk about this, you determine what are the non-negotiables, all right? I mean, my wife and I, we talk about this a lot, and we certainly, man, we're not perfect by any means, and we have, our life, life changes over time. And so what might be non-negotiables today may change in the future, or may not be the same as they were. But for us, it's been things like we're going to do our best to have date night once a week. Because, man, we have three kids, and our lives are hectic. They're crazy, and we don't have any time. By the time, we're just so tired, we don't have a lot of great conversation. And so we're going to have date night. We said Friday night's family night, all right? I say no to my buddies. They want to go out Friday nights. I'm sorry. I can't do it. I'm at home with my family. Don't tell them this, but I usually have more fun with my family anyway. I'm just kidding. But another one, what was the other one? Well, it slipped my mind now. But talk to your spouse. What are the non-negotiables? We miss it sometimes. We do. And we make room for that. We understand that's going to happen. There's seasons that are super busy or I'm traveling or whatever. So we understand there's times that that's not going to happen. We make room for it. But we really do our best to not budge on those, okay? But what if you tried that for just 30 days, okay? I mean, February, whatever the date is, to March, whatever. What is it, the 8th? 7th? Huh? 5th? Oh, wow, I'm ahead. Just can't wait for next week for some reason. Anyway, but what if for the next 30 days you said no to anything that would potentially pull you away from your decision? See, here's the thing. As you pull away from your work, you make this decision, you pull away from your work. What if you just said, okay, instead of sitting in the parking lot and doing those last few emails on my iPhone or my BlackBerry, what if you just said, God, I'm going to trust you to fill in the gaps. God, I'm going to trust you. All right, all these things I get so worried about. All right, then listen. At the end of those 30 days, listen. Then you sit down, and look what happened. Look at what happened. All right, in your finances, in your home, even in your productivity at work. Watch and look at what happened. I think that you'll be surprised. Bottom line is, everybody cheats. Everybody. But let's make sure that we're not cheating on the people who matter the most in our lives. Let's make sure that we're not cheating on that person who dreams and hopes of spending the rest of their lives with us. Let's not cheat our children out of the security that comes from them knowing that they are our number one priority. Listen, nobody gets to the end of their lives on their deathbed and says, man, I just wish I would have worked more hours. You know that. And you and I will not be the first. Would you stand with me? Let's pray. Would you bow your heads for a second? God, I'm reminded that at the essence of faith is really what we just talked about. It's being willing to say yes and to make a decision before knowing how it's all going to work out. That's faith. And that looks so different for all of us, depending on where we're at in our lives, where we're at in our spiritual journey. But one thing I know is that the scriptures are filled with stories of people who live like this. Stories of people who said yes, who surrendered, who made a decision before having any idea how it was all going to work out. And the consistency is, while it was never easy, while it was always risky, the consistency is that we see everywhere in the passage, in the scriptures, is that you were always faithful. And so we trust that you will always be faithful in our lives today. We may not see it immediately. We may not see it for years and years and years. Or we may just not see it because it's at a level at which we just may not. It may happen at a level we're not even realizing it's happening at. But God, would you help us to trust you? And would you give us courage? God, thank you for the opportunity to push that reset button in our lives. Some of us, God, we really need another chance. And that's exactly what you offer us. So we thank you for your love, your grace, your mercy. May we walk in that. And may we walk in that well this week. We pray that now, and we ask that together in your son's name. And everyone said, amen.